Hello and welcome to Self Power Now, where empowering women share their stories and advice about life, work, happiness, love, and success. I'm your host, Debbie Gissoni, and I'm so glad you're here with us today. So sit back and enjoy the show. Today, we're talking to Dorothy Tayo. Dorothy came to California from New York in the early 70s, and within a few months, had a near-death experience, which changed her life and set her on a journey in ways she never anticipated. She started by doing metaphysical workshops, teaching meditation and intuitive development. That led her to teaching hypnotherapy for 3 decades, and then ultimately buying the Palo Alto School of Hypnotherapy, where she is now the owner and director. By the way, that's where I got certified. Today, Dorothy continues to teach and is also an author and speaker and maintains a private practice as a hypnotherapist. Welcome, Dorothy.
Well, hi, Debbie. How are you?
Good. I see you're in your office at the school. Brings me back memories.
Shall I start teaching?
Well, maybe about midway through this interview. You know, I made that same move from New York to California. Where did you live in New York?
Syracuse.
Oh, upstate New York. I was more of a city girl. Yes. But I made the move about a decade later in the mid-80s, although I didn't have as profound an experience as you. I did not have a near-death experience, but I'm really anxious to hear about your near-death experience. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Prior to that, when I came to California, I came from Syracuse, New York, and I worked for Carrier Corporation. And I was in market research. So that tells you a little bit about the fact that I wasn't introduced to any of this until I came to California, which yeah. Apparently is why I came.
Yeah, California has a way of doing that, right? The left coast.
And I only came here for a year to see what it was like. And after about 2 months, I found out what it was like and I decided to stay.
But, point of no return, right?
Exactly. But I think... You know, I think we're all on a journey, and my journey had to start somewhere, and it started with an automobile accident. Mm-hmm. And in this automobile accident, my car rolled over, and it was one of those times I didn't have my car seat on. I mean,
Your seatbelt.
Yeah. And
well, in the 70s, was it even? I don't know if that was even a.
It wasn't demanded of anyone to wear, but the car that I had at that time had one. I just didn't have it on. Mm. And in rolling over, I hit my head. I broke my wrist. I didn't know that at the moment, of course. Mm. And there was a point, a nanosecond, where I felt my mother and my grandmother's presence. Now, I didn't see them. I felt them there. And because of that, and this is all happening in seconds, mind you.
They had already, they had passed away, both of them.
They had passed, yes. Yeah. And I thought, therefore, they were coming to take me with them, that I was going to die.
Was that a soothing feeling?
It was a matter of fact feeling. Mm. It wasn't any, there was no emotion to it. And it was just that this is what was going to happen. The only thought I had, the only concern I had was that someone would have to clean my closet.
Clean out all your stuff.
Exactly. It had nothing to do with anything other than that. And I felt myself going with them. And as I felt myself moving through a time-space warp, is the only thing I can say. As I felt myself moving through that, I then heard a rapping on the car window and someone saying, "Are you all right?" And that pulled me right back into the car.
Mm.
And so when I say near-death experience, I don't mean, you know, it was a full-blown, I was in the light and all of that. But it was from my point of view, a moment where if someone had not rapped on that car window,
You might have continued. Yeah.
Gone.
You had that kind of brush with the, with going over the veil or beyond the veil. Yeah.
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 And that brought me back into the car because obviously I had work to do. And from that point on, having gone back into the car, getting out of the car, being taken to the hospital, you know, patched up, as they say, it took me into the field of real estate, where I met lots of people, and a friend that I had met in real estate got me into a class in meditation, and that class changed my life.
So do you think when you had that experience, your senses were heightened, your intuitive senses were just automatically heightened, or was it the meditation that started bringing you more?
The experience, I look at it from this point of view, the experience ultimately got me into meditation.
Right.
Meditation opened all kinds of doors, including intuition, sensing things, just changing my life. And that ultimately got me into hypnotherapy.
Yeah, and hypnotherapy, yeah. And it's kind of a natural progression. And that's why I got into hypnotherapy, because I was meditating a lot and I wanted to learn more about that body-mind connection. Exactly. And how to expand and heal and go within that subconscious. You know, hypnotherapy has this sort of mystique to some people, right? Some people feel like it's something way out there that they can't possibly understand or wouldn't want to, or they're afraid of, right? And then other people see it as this, what you call show hypnotherapy or stage hypnotherapy, where they see hypnotists on stage where, you know, they make people quack like a duck or whatever. And they think, oh, you know, I don't want to get my mind controlled at all. Tell us a little bit about exactly what hypnotherapy is and what it's not.
Well, let me talk about hypnosis. The word hypnosis for a lot of people for a long time, quite frankly, it caused them to believe that someone would have control over them because of the old B movies, you know, where hypnosis was shown as a control thing. And
yes.
We take out the word hypnosis and erase it, we would be left with mindful meditation, truly. There's a mindfulness to it. It takes us into a deeper, relaxed state. And with imagery, then what's happening there is we are almost in a dream state. And our imagery seems to be very real. And that's all hypnosis is. It is a mindful way of literally changing our perceptions and our ideas about ourselves, and allows us to shift how we see ourselves and how we see the world. You know, I think of hypnosis really, the purpose of hypnosis, ultimately, is to change your perception.
For good. Right.
Yeah.
We need to add that. It's I always say it allows you to make positive change.
Exactly.
And change what I would consider habit forming behaviors or belief systems that sometimes you didn't even know that you had, that need to be sort of tweaked a little bit so that you can make positive changes in your life. Would you agree?
I absolutely would agree with that. Most of us are walking around with perceptions of ourselves that we developed before we were 7 years old.
Right. Right. And they say up until seven is when all those perceptions are developed. And they're, and once they are, which makes parenting so important, right? Once they are, they're really hard to, you know, because you kind of live with them all your life and you usually don't get to wanting to change anything until at least your 20s or 30s or 40s. And sometimes even after that, it's really hard to undo, to unravel those.
Well, because it seems it's our reality.
Right.
By the time we're seven, we've taken in, we have literally drawn conclusions about ourselves based on our experiences and our perception of those experiences. And the subconscious takes that as literally as our truth, when in fact we are drawing conclusions about ourselves based on all of these experiences with a brain that won't be fully developed until we're 25 or six, with a brain that is only producing at that point two brainwave patterns.
Up until you're 25, right?
Well, but up until we're seven, there are only two or three brainwave patterns. And at 25 or six, it's only then that our brain is fully developed.
Right. Can you talk a little bit about the brainwave patterns? Because I called you when I was developing my meditations for my courses, my Self Power Now courses, because I wanted meditative music that had binaural beats that enact or were a catalyst for certain types of brainwaves to have a catalyst for like theta brainwaves. So tell us a little bit about brainwaves and why that's important in hypnotherapy, especially, and meditation as well.
Well, here is the interesting thing. I really got a lot of this from Bruce Lipton's work. And Bruce Lipton is a cellular biologist who has become more I'll almost say a guru to consciousness.
Yes.
And so he has a chart that I sort of have used. But up until the age of two, literally our brains are only producing a delta brainwave pattern, which in a fully developed brain is sleep. And
that's why babies sleep a lot, I guess, right?
At two, a new pattern shows up, and that is the theta brainwave pattern. And the theta brainwave pattern in an adult and a fully developed brain is the dream state. But until we're two, only delta is there. At two, theta begins. And also, we then would understand the terrible twos, because the brain is shifting.
Yeah.
And then at around seven or earlier, the alpha brainwave begins. So by that point, now we've got delta, theta, and alpha. And the beta brainwave pattern, which is in a fully developed brain, is the conscious state, the interactive state, the state you and I are in right now, quite frankly.
Right. And what is alpha?
Alpha is more the, I'm going to say alpha is the sort of daydreamy state.
Yeah, quiet, contemplative.
Yes, and also alpha brainwave pattern happens when you're driving your car.
Yeah, when you're on kind of automatic pilot, right?
You're driving your car at 70 miles an hour down the freeway, and yet in your mind, you're already at your destination talking to people, or you're still having an argument with your husband back at home in your mind's eye.
Right, and you don't really have to concentrate on driving the car because you're already a master at that. You know where you're going, you know where the turns are, you know how to react to lights and whatnot. So you don't have to be present with those items.
Exactly.
So your mind can be moving all over the place. I get it.
It's also a meditative state. Lots of times when people go into meditation, they go into an alpha brainwave pattern. Mm-hmm. And then beta shows up around 12 years old. And then so we have four brainwave patterns. There's also gamma. I won't even say contemplative state. It's the state of being that a composer might go into, or a neuroscientist, or a scientist who is working on equations, where they don't even know there's a world that exists outside of what they're doing right then. They're so focused.
So maybe a lot of geniuses stay in that state a lot.
Yes. You know how you do.
Right. Right now, I'm trying to think of what state am I in right now? Probably a little bit of alpha, a little bit of beta.
I guess we're in beta.
I'm thinking ahead. What else do I need to ask Dorothy today? Well, those brain states are important for people to know, because, you know, we are in a different state, and being in a certain state versus another makes it more conducive or not for suggestion, for hypnotherapy, and for improving and accessing the subconscious. So what is the best state for accessing the subconscious?
State of brainwave pattern.
Theta. Uh-huh. Right. That's what I have in my meditations, the theta brain binaural beats. And what's the best way for people to get to that state?
Well, by learning hypnotherapy.
or by meeting with a hypnotherapist, right?
Yes. Also by going into a deep level of meditation.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And when going into that deep level of meditation, you utilizing some imagery for self-empowerment is essentially, that is hypnosis. And I like to talk too about self-hypnosis. Self-hypnosis is something we do consciously. When we do it consciously and with purpose and intention, then we empower ourselves. But all of us walk around all day long self-hypnotizing. And how do we do that? By the thought processes we have and the mind movies that we create. And when we do that, the subconscious is taking that as though that is absolutely so. It's what's happening. It is why mind-body connection, when people talk about the mind-body connection, I like to preface it with Aristotle's statement of like 3,000 years ago, when he said, a vivid imagination compels the body to obey it, for it is a natural principle of movement. What does that mean? It means that when we're thinking a thought, produces a physiological / emotional response. How do we know that? Well, primarily we can know it by imagining for a moment that we have a lemon in our hand. And imagine for a moment that you're peeling the lemon the way you would peel an orange, taking off all the rind. And now imagine breaking up that lemon in segments and taking two of those segments and putting them on your tongue.
I'm already wincing.
And as you put those segments on your tongue, obviously, you can smell the fragrance, and now chew the segments. As you chew those lemon segments, and your mouth fills with lemon juice, notice what's happening right here, because these are your salivary glands. And your salivary glands begin to function just with that image, just with that imagination. And yet we have no lemon. There is no lemon. We just made believe that we were doing that. And so we recognize that our thoughts produce a physiological response. That's true not only of salivary glands, that's true of other glands in our bodies as well. That's true of the cells in our bodies as well. So whatever we're thinking, whatever you are thinking, is producing a physiological response. Sometimes so subtle that you don't even know that anything is happening. Other times, not so subtle.
Right. I love the lemon example. And I remember that from class. And I think it's the most, probably the most visceral example that shows the mind-body connection.
I think so, yeah.
And it's so simple. It's so simple. And all it is imagination. If you close your eyes and imagine it, it's even more visceral. And your point about the thoughts and controlling your body is so important for everyone. As you said, people are all day long, you're walking around with thousands and thousands of thoughts in your brain,
right?
Whether you like them or not, they're constantly going. And if your thought pattern is a negative pattern from your upbringing, from that before seven feel like, oh my gosh, I'm not good enough, or I'm not this enough, or I'm not that, or I'm not loved, or I'm not worthy of being loved, then you're saying that over and over and over. And then your life actually becomes that reality, because that's what your subconscious is led to believe. And that's what's so important about hypnotherapy, because it lets you unwind those thoughts and create and replace them with positive.
That's exactly right. And the other side of that coin is the self-hypnosis that we do in a negative way, which is when people, people who are worriers, you know, and we all worry.
I have a little bit of that.
Yeah. But when you worry in worst case scenario.
Yes. And you worry about something that is not true, because how can you worry about the future when nobody knows what that future is, right? So you're worrying about something that's completely false. It hasn't even happened yet.
Exactly. And and we're all prone to do that. Is it a self-protective kind of thing? In a way, it's like preparing ourselves for disaster. Yet we keep playing, we literally make up a story in our heads. And as we make up that story, it is worst case scenario. And in that worst case scenario, a vivid imagination compels the body to obey it. So we go into fight, flight, or freeze, just the story we made up.
Yes. Now, what it's all about the story that's been made up. Exactly.
What am I doing with the adrenaline that's being pumped into my body from the story I just made up? And what's that doing to other hormones? And what's that doing to my whole body? And what's that doing to my emotional health and wellness? It's toxifying.
And yes, toxifying, and can lead to illness and some serious psychological.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what can hypnosis do for someone? Hypnosis can help us stop doing these things to ourselves that are so disempowering and so toxifying, and help us heal. And the healing is within. I, you know, when someone comes to me, they will say, oh no, you can hypnotize me and make me well. No, all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. I only know the words to say.
Yeah.
What you're doing with those words inside your body, inside your mind, is absolutely your thing.
Yeah, it's all an inside job, as I call it. And as you said earlier on, when we were talking about stage hypnosis, was that you can't, no one can make you do anything you don't want to do.
That's right.
How do those stage hypnotherapy people work? What do they do to make people act that way? Or is it all a trick?
They don't, no, it's not a trick at all.
Okay.
It's not, they don't make them do anything. People are the people who are on stage are selected in one way or another by the hypnotist. And these are all people who go into a theta brainwave pattern easily and quickly. And in the theta brainwave pattern, that deep is, in hypnosis, we call somnambulism and amnesia. Well, like a dream. Right?
Yes.
Okay. And so they're accepting the suggestions that are being given. They're in a deep dreamlike state. And in for lots of people, when they're dreaming, they walk in their sleep. So they're behaving in certain ways. And that's really all stage hypnosis is. It is getting people into that deep state, which is like a dream state and like walking in your sleep and behaving in certain ways because you're accepting the suggestions.
So it could be that person, the host, maybe pre-selected some of those people based on some questions.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, because you wouldn't know in a big audience who's more susceptible.
Not everyone goes into that state easily and effortlessly, but can anyone be hypnotized? I think so, but not to that depth. That's all.
I talk a lot about, meditation on the show because the show is all about self-power. So I'm glad you're talking about self-hypnosis. And people think, oh, I can't meditate. And what's the difference between meditation and hypnotherapy? Do you want to just talk a little bit about the difference between the two and how we can use both of them, even without, a guide to help us?
There's a different intention with each. Mm. In meditation, our intention is to center ourselves. Our intention is to sort of connect to a higher consciousness, our own higher consciousness. But it might be the same brainwave pattern. Hypnosis has a different intention. Hypnosis is that brainwave pattern, but with imagery that will help us change some aspect of ourselves. It might be taking us out of chronic pain. Might be taking us out of some disease. Might be taking us out of a low self-esteem. Could be many, many things. But there's a purpose to hypnosis that is specific to that individual.
And some guided meditations are hypnotic in nature. If somebody's leading you through and giving you a visualization, like I have the guided meditations that go with my four courses, and there's also one on the site, and those are based on a hypnotherapy induction and taking people into a very, very, very relaxed state so that you can get into that theta brainwave state, and then making suggestions and affirmations that are positive based on whatever that topic is. But I'm glad you mentioned some of the practical ways, because that was going to be my next question. You must be so intuitive to know that, Dorothy. Next, I'll be quacking like a duck. No. What are some of the ways people do use hypnotherapy to improve their lives and well-being? You mentioned a couple, but take us through kind of the process of that. And, is it a one-time thing? Do you have to keep practicing? How does that all work?
What I try to do is introduce people to the fact that they're already doing self-hypnosis, but not in an empowering way. Mm-hmm. And my whole point is to teach them how to do their thinking and their practice in their stories that they make up to empower themselves. I think that when with hypnosis in and of itself, people will come to see me for myriad reasons. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is pain. Chronic pain. Sometimes it is for healing. Sometimes it is for low self-esteem. Sometimes it's for people who don't trust themselves. Sometimes it's to improve their golf game.
I actually did an induction for someone about golf too. Yeah, it doesn't have to be a serious problem.
Sometimes it's just that whatever human issues there are can be helped with hypnosis as a therapeutic intervention. And that's really what hypnotherapy is, isn't it? Hypnosis is a therapeutic intervention. And all we're doing is helping people experience things, think about things differently. And when that goes into the subconscious, then miracles happen.
Also, but don't people use it for pre-surgery? They'll get a hypnotherapy induction and, you know, kind of use that in the weeks leading up to surgery to picture, you know, everything going smoothly, a good outcome and such.
Yeah. Because what we're doing then is working with stress-related issues. And surgery is certainly a stress-related issue. Most people, before they have surgery, are worried about it.
Sure.
Well, they start thinking about it and, you know, what's going to happen and what if and what if and what if. And those what if answers are rarely supportive or empowering. So stress, I think, is probably, and anxiety are probably one or two of the main reasons people seek out a hypnotherapist.
Well, the byproduct of stress is so many things, right? So you can be having so many issues.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing about self-esteem and that sort of changing your thinking process or your belief system, false belief system that you had as children. What about, you mentioned healing. How can you really heal your body through hypnotherapy or even, you know, chronic pain? How does it help relieve chronic pain?
When we change our thoughts and our perceptions about healing and or chronic pain, a new picture has to arise. And so let's say someone has been diagnosed with cancer and they've been told that they have a tumor the size of a golf ball. Mm-hmm. The doctor has said, you know, you have this tumor and it's the fast growing kind and you better get your life in order. You might only have, you know, 5 weeks to live. I had a friend that actually that happened to. And so what's the first thing when you hear that? What's the first thing you're doing in your head?
You had a huge stress.
More than that, you've got a picture of that golf ball.
Yes, yes.
And where it is and what's happening to it, and it's getting bigger and bigger. That's your picture. And remember what Aristotle said?
Right.
A vivid imagination compels the body to obey it.
Mm.
So we are, when we're diagnosed with something, we are participating in the way that it's developing, the development of it, simply by our worries and our thoughts. Now, my job when I'm working with
someone, what you think about, what you focus on, expands.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, if someone's been diagnosed with that, then I say, okay, well, let's set up a different picture. Let's set up a picture of that golf ball sized shape getting smaller and smaller. Let's think about it as shrinking. And as it shrinks rather quickly. Just think about that for a minute. And as it shrinks quickly, it loses all of its power and ultimately disappears. And now you look in your body and the only thing present is healthy tissue, health and wellness in every cell, and your body is glowing with health and wellness. What do you think about that? I will say to a client. And literally sometimes they burst into tears because they will say, that's not what the doctor told me. Mm. Well, I know, but the doctor only knows what he told you or she told you based on their experience and the books they read and some of the other things. What does the doctor know about you? Not much. And you have an ability to heal because you've been doing it all of your life. And so why would this be any different than a cut that happens when you're cooking.
So in this example you're giving this person, were you able to shrink that tumor?
Well, let's put it this way. The doctor told her that she had about 5 weeks to live. Don't even count on 5 months. And she had the fast growing kind. And let's see. It was so bad, they weren't even going to do chemo or anything.
Wow.
That's how bad it was.
And that's kind of a death sentence, right?
Well, sounds like one to me.
Yeah.
And so she and I started working immediately with visualization, hypnotherapy, shifting her belief in all of that. And she did demand that they do something. And so they did some radiation. And let me tell you this, that about a year later, there was no cancer in her body.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing.
I know. And her doctor never asked her what she had done or why she thought she'd survive.
Well, he or she didn't want to be wrong.
Isn't that the truth? Anyway, my point is this, that when we change our minds, when we are thinking differently, our bodies literally are compelled to obey that or respond to that thought. In the same way our bodies, our salivary glands are compelled to respond to the thought of a lemon and chewing a lemon.
That lemon. Yeah. So when a person comes to you, a client, for whatever, I mean, some things are more serious than others, does it take a number of visits? What can people expect?
Well, if it's something like a catastrophic mm-hmm. illness, it's going to take several sessions, and that person has to get into the rhythm, if you will, of practicing thinking differently, of creating these thoughts, of
counting out the negative, right? Because it's really hard.
It is, but here, you know, what you're doing is you're asking them to have a vivid imagination, but here's the imagining that I want you to do.
Right.
That's in best case scenario.
And I know you provide people with like a CD or an audio, right? So that they can listen to it on their own as well in between sessions.
But if someone is coming to see me for anxiety or stress or that kind of thing, one or two sessions generally is all that's needed.
Right, right. Now, you are in Northern California, but for listeners who are maybe even around the world, we've got listeners in all countries. Is there a way for them to find, like, is there a society or a way for them to find a hypnotherapist in their area?
I would think that they could go online and wherever they are, put in hypnotherapist and find a number of people who would be available to them. I know that in Europe, you know, Europe, in the UK and France and those areas, hypnotherapy is used far more than it is even here.
Yeah, I think it's used in the operating room more and whatnot. What are some of the red flags maybe for people that are seeking a hypnotherapist? What, you know, that will say, okay, don't use that person.
That's a good question. You know, I would say that if the hypnotherapist says something like, well, you'll need 10 sessions and
I'll cure you, you know?
Yeah. Then run, do not walk. and after you've had a session with a hypnotherapist, you know, we're humans. And sometimes whether it's a psychologist, psychiatrist, a psychotherapist, sometimes the energies don't mix.
Yeah. You have to be comfortable with the person, especially you're in a very vulnerable state.
Exactly right. And so That's, you know, that's up to the individual. Does this work for me? Does this feel right? And also I want to know where the person had been trained.
Yes.
You know, in California, for example, with this school, I tell people right up front, you don't really need a certificate to practice hypnotherapy. And there is no
Now you tell me after I got my certification. No, I loved coming to the school. I loved learning about myself more, about the human mind, about the brain. To me, that was so much fun to learn all of that and be able to apply it both in my own life and in others. And how do you apply hypnotherapy in your daily life, Dorothy?
I do self-hypnosis all the time. I catch myself, you know, sometimes thinking in a negative way.
It's so hard not to. I mean,
well, because we're
gosh.
And we're subject to emotion.
And, yes.
And so if I start thinking in some negative way, I stop myself. I say, stop. Now, what's the truth here? What is it you want to have happen? How do you want that to happen? Let's develop that thought and go with that.
Change the story, the words, the images, everything around it, right?
And then I have this thing, you know, I talk to the cells in my body, and I tell the cells to do what they know to do to heal whatever it is I want healed.
Do they ever talk back to you?
No, they smile.
Well, that's a good visualization. When you try to visualize a healthy cell, visualize it just smiling, like having all these like beautiful cells all over your body, just smiling at you saying, how can I serve you? How can I serve you?
Well, what's wrong with that?
I love it. I love it. I love it.
Isn't that more empowering than, than feeling like a victim to whatever is happening in life?
Yes. And we are all about self-empowerment here. That's why it's called Self Power Now. Dorothy, I loved your listening to you today. I loved having you as a guest. I hope this helps other listeners seek out some help and feel more empowered. And listeners, you can find links to connect with Dorothy or the Palo Alto School of Hypnotherapy if you're in the Bay Area, as well as hear more shows or sign up for some of my free programs on selfpowernow.com/guide. For example, if you're looking to have more love and better relationships in your life, who is it? Join my free 5-day self-love challenge or join my new that I'm starting next month, my monthly Zoom love-in, where you can actually ask me questions live. That page again is selfpowernow.com/guide. Thank you again, Dorothy. It was wonderful to have you here, and I wish all the listeners a wonderful day. Come back and join us next time. Thanks for listening to Self Power Now. If you enjoyed today's show, please share it with others. Follow it on your favorite podcast platform. And join our community on selfpowernow.com and receive 3 free happiness gifts. And while you're there, if you're looking for more ways to be happy, healthy, peaceful, and loved, check out my books and new online courses. Until next time, this is Debbie Jasone wishing you self-power now.